Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Dan, we are doing something we rarely do, which is do a live post show, kind of while the show is still going on. It's a weird situation. We're starting at our normal time after the two-hour collision, live on TNT. But Battle of the Belts 7 is on in the background. I'm got it on in the background, so we're kind of live watching that together as Lance Archer and Orange Cassidy go at it for the international title. But we got multiple events, newsworthy happenings from AEW Collision to talk about and analyze. And I want to start with the tag team title match. A nearly 60-minute draw. FTR pulled it out with just less than 3 minutes left in the match, winning 2-1. The announcers predicted it would be a classic early. They were, I think, right, and then declared it an instant classic by the end. That is what AEW fans were hoping to see a lot of when FTR signed. Jay and Juice, I think a really good team, just shining last week, shining even more so this week. And it was, there's a lot of good wrestling on television. That is at or near the top of what I've seen recently. What'd you think?
Yeah, I can't give this enough superlatives. I think people that know me, you know, being from Missouri and growing up kind of at the end of St. Louis wrestling, but then getting into it kind of after the fact, I mean, they did throwbacks to everything, and obviously a lot of throwbacks to the Hart family, but I just thought of this as St. Louis wrestling, and to me, that's the highest praise you can give. I loved it. One of your weekly hosts, we were in a little bit of a discussion on text. He thought maybe the first fall went too long. I didn't at all. I thought it was phenomenal. There's just nothing I would improve upon it. And to me, I'm sitting there thinking they might go the hour with Bullet Club Gold up 1-0.
Yeah.
Which is a finish they used to do in St. Louis a lot. Now, usually the champions would be up when that happened, but my mind was going in all sorts of different directions. And then I didn't realize the actual match started at like 5 or 6 minutes after the hour. So I was thinking, right when I was thinking, you've got to give us a time cue, Dasha came in with that time cue, and that was good. Yeah, I loved it. I've got two pages of notes on it, but I don't even know what to say. I mean, there's just so much out of that match. So many little things, so much amazing selling, so much tie-ins to other matches and to just even things from New Japan. I'm considering it for match of the year. I loved the Wrestle Kingdom match with Kenny and Ospreay, and I loved, you know, Danielson, MJF, and a lot of different things. But I at the end of that match, I was saying match of the year. So I may be even higher on it than anybody else. I just, that hit me right where I live, man. Like, I was like, thank you for asking me to do this, because I probably would have watched live anyway, but I made a special point to do it. And it's one of those things you enjoy living in the moment to watch.
So you've got a lot of notes on it. I'm not asking this because I disagree with you. This is my leading contender for match of the year. What did you love about it? And start by elaborating on what St. Louis has to do with it for people who aren't familiar with
the
history of wrestling.
So, and somewhere out there you can find the old Larry Matisick used to do month-by-month recaps with the guy that did 57 Gold. I can't remember who it was. And, you know, they sold those as recordings. I bought some of them, but I'm sure they're out there somewhere. And just, so St. Louis, obviously, you know, I could go on and on about it, but it was very much built on logical booking and sports-like presentation. But part of that sports-like presentation is the world title match in St. Louis, the NWA world champion, would always, it wasn't a question. They would wrestle 2 out of 3 falls. And they would have an hour time limit. And in order to beat the champion, you had to beat him twice within an hour. And, you know, obviously in this case, the Jay and Juice had the momentum from the previous victories, and the champions were kind of, you know, maybe presented a little bit as the underdogs, but they were going to have, and again, you know, in retrospect, you can say Jay and Juice got too arrogant because apparently they insisted on the 2 out of 3 falls. Well, the story would say they won the first fall. They could have won the titles. And obviously that being a one fall match for 40, whatever minutes it was, would have been amazing anyway. But yeah, it was just, that's the world champion, top of the card stuff. You go 2 out of 3 falls, you may not go the hour, but you know, there's a possibility of going the hour. And that's how the best champions always defended their title back in the 70s and early 80s. And this lived up to it. I mean, those guys are old school guys. I know FTR maybe even more than, but I mean, Jay's obviously a student of everything. I mean, that guy is amazing. And yeah, so hopefully that answers your question a little bit. I mean, I just, wow. I mean, you know, just so much. And again, I get excited. I write things I can't read, but, you know, I wrote down stuff when Juice kicked out at 1 at the 20-minute mark. I thought Ann Riccoboni stepped it up really well, and Nigel during this match. They added to it. Cash was playing Ricky Morton at one point, and amazing. It's not that amazing. He's that good at it, but it just babyface in peril, like 101. I mean, that was about the 30-minute mark. I mean, those guys were lighting each other up with the chops too. I mean, it was intelligent, smart wrestling, but it was physical. And they got me with the false finish at the 43-minute mark. I wrote that down. That I thought, I think that's the heels were going to win the first fall. But this felt like a war. And I'm writing this at 43 after the hour, so I have this time stamped by the central time, but. I mean, yeah, it just felt like a war at 54 minutes. And some of the stuff that some people might find cheesy where they kind of came back up to battle those last 5 minutes, I was loving every second of it. It was completely believable. I loved the post-match. I didn't care who won at the end. Like, I just thought this is so phenomenal. I thought they'd go to 60, actually. And I kind of liked that idea just to keep – I just hope this isn't it. Sometimes AEW has these amazing matches – and then you don't see it again for 2 years. And I hope that's not the case here, because these guys are magic together. Just, yeah. Boy, I'm still excited about it, Wade.
Yeah. No, I am too. That was just compelling and gripping. And it wasn't, like, full of, like, needlessly flashy moves.
No gimmicks.
Yeah. It was just a straight-up sports-like, hard-hitting tag match. I mean, yeah, they tumbled over the ringside barricade and sold, you know, potential injury, called doctors over. I don't know if there was any legit concern. It was just kind of, you know, done for drama. AEW, you know, just issued last Wednesday at Dynamite, you know, pinned up a list of regulations and rules for matches. And one of them is don't pretend to be legitimately injured, but they didn't break any of those rules. And in the context of what they did with their body language and stuff. It was largely fought inside the ring.
Yep.
I thought, like, it wasn't, you know, I mean, we just replayed on the Blue feed, the Weight Killer podcast feed, my interview with Cody Rhodes 5 years ago, and he talked about, you know, his criticism that he told the Bucks to their face. It wasn't like saying it behind their back on the show. You know, his criticism of their style, and a common criticism of the Bucks is just a complete disregard for the notion that you fight within certain parameters and rules. They're like, yeah, but the more moves, the more exciting it is. And who cares if there's tags? And if there's four-way action for 45 straight seconds and the ref looks hapless, if the crowd is popping, that's all that matters. There's an argument for that. There's people love the Young Bucks. Plenty of them. You know, it's not like people like, well, you know, in unison are like, we can't watch a Bucks match because they violate the five-second rule or the tag rope, holding the tag rope. That said, this to me is painting within the – it's coloring within the lines.
Yep.
And you know, it's a really well – I always go back to this. It's like journalism is not about font changes and colors and flowery emojis, flowery adjectives, hearts dotted on the I's. You use words in paragraphs with grammar. And grammar is not a barricade. It doesn't get in your way. It just provides structure and format to serve the reader. And to me, the rules of a tag match – shouldn't get in the way of a great match. They should be That those are the parameters that you work within, so the match makes sense. And so I'm just a bigger fan of this style match, even though I've loved many, many Young Bucks matches. This, to me, I respect more because they told this great story, but they didn't need a ton of chaos. Now, there were a lot of kickouts.
Everything was within the construct of what wrestling is supposed – what I think wrestling is supposed to be. I mean, this may be a dull audio because I'm just going to be like, agree. But, I mean, I was called, my buddy just flew to Houston. He's been on his honeymoon in Europe. He's like, should I watch this match immediately? I kind of have sleep to catch up on. I'm like, just watch the match. Cause he'll agree with me. He went to the FTR Briscoe's match in Dallas. He lives in Houston. So I'm like, yeah, watch this. Just watch this. That's right. Everything's within the construct, the parameters, enhance the match, don't take away from it. And that's where I live. I love that.
This is my style match. And, you know, they had a lot of near falls, and there were big moves that they kicked out of. But, again, it didn't feel excessive to me. Like, it felt like
frustration, I don't mean to interrupt, but the frustration FTR was having in that second fall was so – I was frustrated, I mean, as a fan. I was like, it was so believable, and they sell it. They, you know, like they're within the moment. They're wrestling when they're out there. I feel like they're not play wrestling or acting like they're wrestling. They're feeling everything, which is an amazing tool and an amazing ability to have. It's not like I feel their disappointment. Like it, I guess it's not really real, but within the moment, I feel like it is. Like it was so great the way they finally overcame all that.
Yeah, the body language, the facial expressions, you know, it's not about fitting as many moves into every 5-minute period of a match as you can. It's about milking moments, and they did that. And that's one of the things you brought up that I really like is when they kind of hit the reset button in the match, deep into the match, and they just faced off, and the crowd is standing and cheering. And they're looking at each other.
Well, that crowd certainly didn't hurt. Boy, they were into it, and as they should have been.
Yep, and they had a good crowd. Like, this was the best – I think it was the best collision crowd they've had in Canada in terms of quantity. I think they were approaching 6,000, and tickets were going. They were moving tickets in the afternoon, according to WrestleTix also. And so, you know, I was anticipating a really nice crowd size, but, boy, did they bring it. And we'll talk about Punk momentarily too. And
let me say something real quick about CM Punk, if it's okay, before I forget. And this may seem overly praiseful or whatever, but there are wrestlers throughout the years. And I know those guys are big buddies and everything. But, you know, this is he's the main event. He's the big deal. He's the big star that might have said, oh, maybe you guys should slow her down a little bit, not to outshine what we're going to do. And those two matches were very similar but also very different. But, you know, I think it's worth something. And that doesn't seem to fly in AEW anyway, but – obviously, nobody put the restrictors on these guys. I mean, they went all out from start to finish.
Oh, totally. And so the reset was cool because
I thought so.
It was a moment of mutual respect between enemies. What's going on with Orange Cassidy's hand? Is this? Did he really break it? Because it feels like there's a.
Yeah, I may be ahead of you. They acclaimed in the ring right now on my feed, and I don't know what happened in the other match. Like, it seems like they stopped it.
Yeah, I'm a few minutes behind because I keep hitting rewind as I kind of have this on in the background. But man, he's doing a good job selling a broken hand if it's not broken. And I'm not paying close enough attention to hearing commentary to know if this is obviously a storyline or not, but it did catch my eye in the background here.
My guess is they're going to continue that match. I don't know because I didn't see a finish. I was going to ask you, but I'm kind of focused on our conversation as well.
Yeah. I just glanced up, and then I looked down, and then I glanced up like a minute later, and now he's at ringside getting the tape pulled off. So, and being helped to the back and looking like he's in rough shape. So my point being, I love when there's heel team and a face team, and they're going at it, but you're 40 some minutes into it, maybe 50. I can't remember. And you kind of stop and soak up the moment, let the fans do it.
Hello?
Hey, Dan. All right. Yep. We're back.
Good. Great.
Yeah. Our switchboard just disconnected us. So we lost a few people hung up, but hopefully they call back. It was just sort of this, we know we're in the midst of, you know, it's like respect has been earned the last 45 minutes. Let's finish this. I really liked that they had the 5 minutes remaining announcement, but they didn't go to the draw. And I'd have been fine if they did, but I like that they did, you know, that
I do too. In retrospect, I do too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it adds more intrigue when they do go to the draw next time. Cause they haven't done that for, you know, they did it on the very first Cody and was it Ricky Starks? I think one of the first couple shows or Cody and Sammy, maybe I forget, but you know, they've done it a few times in their history, but not very often, but this is the kind of finish that makes it, better when they do a draw. Like I was actually just listening to an audio from the 88 Great American Bash where Tully and Arn and Nikita and Sting went to a draw, and the NWA, you know, they would occasionally have the finish right before the draw, but you need to do both. So this was fine. Yeah. And it would have been ridiculous had they not given the time cue at 5 minutes. I've been watching G1. I wish they would do, maybe they could start it at, you know, halfway through the match, but I wish they would just do all the time cues. It doesn't really take anything away from the match, but they'd choose not to do that.
Yeah. I going to the AWA shows as a kid, you know, they would announce, you know, 15 minutes elapsed, 15 minutes remain, you know, that kind of thing. It was a 30-minute match. And, you know, if it was a 20-minute TV match, 20 minutes or 10 minutes elapsed, 10 minutes left, same thing, 60. So when you do that, it doesn't give away it's going to be a draw. It doesn't give away it's going to be a finish, but it does cue up the fans to understand that the countdown is on. And if you do get to the 55-minute mark, as this match did, it does accelerate the drama. So
absolutely, that
worked really well. So the first fall. I made a mental note to bring this up too because you said a friend of yours that you're texting with, who shall go unnamed because I disagree with whoever it was, said the first fall should not have lasted 19 minutes. I loved it because one of my pet peeves about 2 out of 3 fall matches is when the first fall ends unnaturally quickly.
It just
doesn't make any sense that in a best of three falls match, a pinfall would occur earlier. I can live with a submission happen earlier, quicker than it normally would in a one fall match, because it would make sense that somebody might submit to save their energy or avoid injury.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that story. So that happens at the 7 minute mark. Okay. I can live with that if you don't do it all the time, but you shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't do a pinfall sooner than it would happen otherwise. And they didn't. It was, you know, a full-fledged match by the time the first fall happened. So I like that. I think that should be the norm 4 out of 5 times at least.
Yeah, and I think it was over 40, I think, or right around 40. But then they're so good, getting those last two falls in 15 minutes didn't seem the least bit unnatural. Like, they'd worn each other down. So, of course, eventually, you know, you chop wood, chop wood, chop wood, the tree's going to fall eventually. And FTR was able to do that twice in, you know, say 15 minutes. And I thought it made perfect sense. I can't say enough positives about this match. I some people would say, well, they don't like the submission. I mean, you know, it's kind of a Bret Hart thing. It's Calgary, and it's not like it wasn't laid in there like it was believable to me. And again, you couple this, I went back, I tried to do my research, and again, it was no pain to go back and, because I was at the, I mentioned to you, the Avid Brothers, my favorite band was at Red Rocks last Saturday, so I didn't see the show live, but I went back and watched that match, and you know, the way that match, you don't see a lot of failed saves like that, like the match ended last week. I mean, this is like, these guys are artists. They are really good. I'm on team all four of these guys.
Yes. I did, by the way, just quick note, replay the Orange Cassidy hand injury, and he began reacting to a broken hand after punching Archer in the head. It didn't seem like it fit a storyline. It's just he might have broken a bone in his hand punching, landing the punch. Archer didn't sell it like it was a legit hit, but man, is Orange Cassidy in as much pain as I've witnessed a wrestler. There's so many nerve endings in there. So, but I've been fooled before, you know, by things. But it was kind of weird, and Archer's reaction seemed like unplanned. So, well, I'm sure we'll get. By the time most people hear this on delay, they'll know what – there'll be news on it. But I did replay that just to get some clarity on that. Dan, let's pause because I want to talk more about FDR and Jay Juice. Also, we got two Own Heart Cup tournament matches and some other stuff. Ian recommending on commentary compared to Kevin Kelly. So we can talk about that too and more. Our first caller up is going to be Scott and Tamp in a moment, but I do want to formally introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, July 15th, 2023. And we are obviously talking AEW Collision. We went live about 5 minutes after the show went off the air. And we got Battle of the Belts on in the background that immediately followed Collision on TNT. It's a one-hour special, and they do them just semi-regularly. If they just flowed from one show into the other. And in fact, Ricky Starks crossed paths with Jushin Liger right at the beginning of Battle of the Belts after he beat CM Punk for the Owen Hart Cup. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. I've been covering pro wrestling since 1987 when I was a high school student and started a newsletter. Didn't know where it would lead, but here I am. And also the editor of PWTorch.com. Hope you're checking that out. We've got the minute-by-minute numbers for last week's Collision exclusively. And I compared how the FTR Juice and J match did last week compared to the CM Punk Joe main event and other parts of the show. That is posted right now. And we have other exclusive news, including some insight, perspective, and analysis on that aforementioned new set of match guidelines and prohibited spots that AEW distributed to talent on Wednesday. And so there's usually some good exclusive stuff in our news section. So it is worth making PW Torch one of your stops as you're gathering news and catching up on results. We also have Javier Machado's full detailed report on today's G1 Climax event. Javier did a great job with that. So check that out to see his review of the show and the match results. You can read it beforehand or follow along as you're watching it if you haven't gotten to it yet. So lots of good stuff over at pwtorch.com, including my coverage of this episode of Collision. So check that out, pwtorch.com. The other voice you've heard so far on the show is Dan Keister. He is a PW Torch contributor and a friend of mine. We've hung out in Waterloo, Iowa at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame event multiple summers in recent years. And he is back after just 2 weeks. Normally we wait at least 3 weeks between co-hosts being on the air. But Dan, you were so good. Oh, wait, no, that's not why. Your schedule is limited enough this summer that there are only a couple of openings. So I was like, well, I had so much fun a couple of weeks ago. Let's fit you in when you're available. And I think there's probably only one more time this summer that you know you're available. But I wanted to be sure we got to chat again. And we'll get some other co-hosts into the rotation in coming weeks. But it's great to talk with you again. And I'm glad you're on because to be able to talk about St. Louis wrestling, that style match that we just watched that went nearly 60 minutes. I know as a kid growing up, I just dreamed of being eyewitness to a 60-minute draw. Even though they're sort of overrated when you have to sit through them old school wise, you know, there's some filler. Just as Brett and Sean, you know, have been, I don't criticize as a word, but, you know, 60-minute draws aren't always as exciting bell-to-bell as tonight's tag match was. But I still wanted to be eyewitness to one because I read about them in the magazines, and they were legendary. And tonight is one of those matches where people will be talking about I was there for it. And if you can be lucky enough to be part of a show where you can say I was there for that in 5 years or 3 years or 12 years and people – at a bar or at a convention or some new wrestling fan you met at work, and they go, you were there for that? And they remember it too? That's cool. And that's what happened tonight. So, Dan, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Well, I appreciate that, Wade, and I'm really enjoying this. So based on the times that the Missouri Football Tigers are playing football in the fall, I'll try to stay in the rotation. I just won't know till a couple weeks out because, this is great. And, again, Collision's really probably becoming my favorite wrestling show pretty quickly. It just there's a lot that they do that again appeals to me as a fan. And then when you get matches like this thing tonight, and it really card was pretty great top to bottom, but obviously the tag match was the number one draw for me. That's a pretty cool thing, and I lived through the same thing. You know, the aura of seeing a 60-minute draw was like huge when you read the wrestling magazines at as a kid at my age and stuff. And again, hearing about, you know, people that did follow St. Louis wrestling, where they did that more frequently than most places, going back to Dory Funk Jr. or Jack Briscoe. That's pretty cool stuff. And so, yeah, they teased it really well tonight. I mean, again, I've been full of superlatives for this match and for the show.
Absolutely. So if anybody wants, who's live streaming us, maybe you've got Battle of the Belts on in the background, but if you want to call and comment on the Collision episode or and anything on that, or also anything that you might be watching in the background on Battle of the Belts, consider yourself invited. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you've downloaded our show later this weekend, early into the week, and you want to know how to listen live, go to pwtorch.com during Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, or Collision, and look for the link. You can live stream the show. It's at the top and bottom of my TV reports covering those shows. You can also go to our Twitter feed at pwtorch. I almost always post a link along with the phone number there. And you can also just go to wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to the live stream. So lots of ways to find us. We start about 5 minutes after the show's end, and we love to have live listeners, especially those who choose to join us in the conversation. So consider yourself invited for that. Our number right now, 347-215-8558. We're lower on calls than usual. Understandable. We kind of knew going in with Battle of the Belts on in the background that might be the case, and it is. So it's a short wait if you want to join the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so let's go to Scott in Tampa, Florida. He is our first caller here, and get his take on Collision. Welcome, Scott. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's been a while since we talked. How are you doing, Wade? And nice to talk to you,
Dan. Doing good.
That's perfect. Good,
yeah,
good.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, so this is my first Collision show I'm calling into, but, you know, I've really enjoyed all the shows that I've watched, and I agree with you guys and what you said at the top of the show. You know, this is the best crowd, non-Chicago crowd that they've had for Collision, and I thought it made a huge difference in the presentation of the show tonight. That FTR Bullet Club Gold match was, I mean, I was, you know, I'm not a huge tag team wrestling fan, but that was probably the best tag team match that I've ever seen. I mean, quite honestly, I didn't expect that. I knew it would be a good match, but going an hour long or nearly an hour long, just amazing. But the one thing I did want to the other match I wanted to discuss was CM Punk and Ricky Starks. I mean, it was a good match,
yeah.
But I don't. The polarizing response to CM Punk is just, it's not fun for me to watch. And I've talked about this before, when Cody Rhodes was the last 6 months in AEW and he was having that polarizing response. And, you know, we've dealt with five or six years of Roman Reigns having that split crowd, John Cena. I mean, it's not fun for me because it's hard to get in the match. It's hard to cheer or boo the other guy when, you know, the guy who's supposed to be the babyface here in CM Punk is getting half boos and it's very, very loud. And, you know, you would say that, well, a quick fix is just to turn him in heel, but it looks like they're turning Ricky Starks heel with the way he won the match and how he grabbed the trophy from Jason Liger there at the beginning of Battle of the Belt. But even if they did turn Punk heel, I feel like his fans would still cheer him a lot. And I don't know. It's just for me, I haven't been able to get into his character since he returned. The matches have been great. The promos have been good. But it's just, I don't know. It's not having fun. So, like, what would you guys do to try to fix that? Or is there a way of fixing it?
Dan, does it need to be fixed? And even
no.
If it doesn't need to be, do you want? How would you fix it?
I wouldn't try to fix it. And I appreciate what Scott's saying. I was at the Kansas City taping, the last one Cody Rhodes was at, and, you know, the crowd was – but like, here's the thing I think that makes it work to me. For one, I would say, Scott, if you were at the show, do you feel like that the crowd responding that way would make you more vociferous either for or against Punk?
No, because, like, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah, because for me, like, I'm not a huge Punk fan, but I don't, like, hate the guy. I mean, I don't know him personally, so I can't hate anyone I don't know. But, I mean, I didn't like, you know, the negativity he's brought to the company, but I want to give him a chance. It's just that, you know, so for me, when I go to, when I'm watching wrestling, I'm sitting in the crowd, I want to, you know, think about what's going on in the internet. I want, you know, live in the moment. And so, honestly, I don't know how I feel, but, so.
No, that's fine. I guess for me, and it's a matter of personal preference, if I was at that show, I would be, and I would probably be playing along going for Punk. And that crowd would make me more like, okay, I'm going to shout these jerks down and root for my guy. And the thing to me that makes it work is Punk clearly doesn't care. Like, Punk doesn't mind. He just thinks those people booing him are stupid. And he really believes that, I think. And he's going to play off that, and he's going to be a little smarmy, but then at the same time, he's going to say, for his people, I'm going to you know, live up to being their hero or their favorite guy. It's very much like Bret Hart in Canada to me in 1997. And to me, that was some of the most compelling stuff WWE ever did. So, you know, I understand your point, and I don't know how many people feel that way. I personally do not. I think Punk is the perfect guy to just keep being the baby face that shoves it in the people's face that he doesn't like. Now, of course, he lost tonight, so he's a little bit less to brag about. And I think I would play it out. I mean, they can have a compelling back and forth with he and Ricky Starks that should continue. And I think it will for a little while, given the finish. And I think they can make it work. I wouldn't fight it. I don't think, and getting back to your point, I think trying to fight it, I don't think they can really do it. I think it's just going to be a waste of energy to try to fight it. As you said, the people that like Punk are going to continue to like Punk. So I think I'd stick with what they're doing. And maybe it's the juice isn't worth the squeeze, but I thought it was damn good TV. Like, I was going, this crowd is not quiet. They may be split, but they are into it. And to me, that's, you know, you don't want them sitting on their hands, and they certainly weren't. So that would be, we'll see what Wade thinks, but that's kind of where I am.
Yeah, so a couple of things. First of all, when Roman Reigns was being pushed very, very hard as a babyface and fans were rejecting him, and WWE tried to spin it into, hey, any reaction is a good reaction, I argued, and I still believe to this day, a big reaction that's divisive or counter to the framing of the character is a consolation prize, but it's not the goal. Your goal is to have the fans react in a way that lines up with how the wrestler is portrayed, especially if it's a babyface fighting heels. You don't want the heels being cheered, and you don't want to look like you miscast someone. So, and that was the case with John Cena, too. They had people in that company convinced it's great that people boo and cheers, that people boo Cena. It's like, no, it's better than no reaction, for sure, but it's better to have everybody cheering him, and it's better, like Reigns now, to have everybody booing him. Now, that said, CM Punk is a different situation because he's a different kind of personality. He is a controversial personality. He is blunt without a social filter. And he did have a real-life situation with other baby faces in the company that people have issues with, especially in Canada because of Kenny. So this is different than those. Now, if I'm AEW, I'd rather have everybody cheering him or everybody booing him in a way that matches our framing of him. But this is a reaction to something that's not in their control. And it is the next best thing to a unified reaction, is that people tuning in and going, I like Punk, and this crowd's booing him. What's wrong with them? Or, I don't like Punk, and I like these boos. That makes me feel good that all these fans feel the way I do about him. Everyone can kind of listen and be intrigued with each city's reaction to him. I think you'll get more cheers stateside than he got on this Canada tour, but we will see. He has done nothing to bring on the boos as a character at this point. He's been, you know, the pro-trans kid speech off air that got a lot of publicity, the hey, cheer for Owen, not me last week. He's fighting hard. He's looking good. He's you know, I reported on PWTorch.com that he's getting good grades for leadership behind the scenes in the locker room. You can read more on that at PWTorch.com in the AW News section that went up over about a week ago. There's a lot of good things with Punk, and I think he might win fans over if he continues to do exactly what he's doing and they match him against heels who fans dislike. I think fans can be won over. So, Scott, that's the answer to your question. How do you fix it, assuming you if AEW thinks it's broken, or if they just think it's better to have them cheered than the divisive reaction? If they think that, I honestly say stay the course and be sure you have good, solid heels. And if you tell your stories well and the construct of your storytelling, it shames heels for bad attitude, bad sportsmanship, cheating, all of that. If you don't ignore it or applaud it, which sometimes they do and sometimes WWE does, but you point out, you know, there's a reason that you should boo this person, and you don't have cool, likable people in heel roles who get cheered. I mean, it, a lot of it is on the booking side. But if the booking works for Punk, I think people will start cheering him. So now one thing you said, Dan, is that you think Punk obviously isn't bothered by it. I see that as a performance from Punk because he doesn't want fans to know he's bothered by it.
Yeah.
I think he is. I do. Yeah. I know. I don't know that. I just want
that was
to
more of a character statement, I think.
Yeah.
The character doesn't. He plays
right.
off.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I was going to ask you both if you feel this way. I felt like the anti-Punk crowd started to win over some of the Punk crowd during the match. Like, the beginning of the match, it seemed more split than toward the end until Ricky cheated. That, you know, the crowd kind of built a little bit more toward Ricky, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, when you know, the boos rang out, and then there's a pro CM Punk chant when he got to the ring, and then the boos got loud to try to drown out the CM Punk chants, and the match started with a CM Punk, let's go Ricky chair, let's go whatever it was, you know, doing
right.
a chant for the two. And so, yeah, it was, and the announcers are playing it up. This is a polarizing Punk, divisive reaction and all that, which are the things we heard with Reigns and Cena. And like I said, this is a different circumstance than those because Punk is a different kind of babyface than Reigns and Cena, and his character can relish it in a way that feels believable and not, you know, it's not like Cena was popular with the kids and Reigns was popular with kids and women, but the guys were booing. And I think that was sort of confusing to the kids and who liked Cena, who liked Reigns. And that's just not the case here. AEW doesn't cater to kids and, it's, you know, Punk's character isn't hurt by the divisive reaction. So, I mean, my choice is if I had total control, I'd have the faces cheered and the heels booed, and I would consider it a problem, like with Cody, when it went off the rails. But I think it works better with Punk than Cody, Reigns, or Cena. Scott, back to you for any reaction to that or anything else you want to bring up.
Yeah, I mean, I see both you guys made some great points. You know, and I would stay the course, too, you know, because I thought about it, you know, weeks before he returned, like how could they book him? And I just, the answer I gave myself was just for the first few weeks, just let him go out there against heels, against faces, and just see what's the strongest reaction and keep his character that way. So, you know, maybe, you know, these last, you know, 4 weeks or so, I guess they've been in Canada, it feels like forever. So, but hopefully, you know, we get different crowds and we can see, like, what reaction he, you know, he gets going forward, and if it's worth just keeping him as a face, but it probably is, you know, at this point. Another thing I want to bring up is the second half of the other party in that match. It's Ricky Starks, who I'm looking at right now while he's getting presented the trophy by Dr. Hart. What do you guys see from him going, you know, from here? Like, he's a guy who has some stop and starts, I feel like. You know, it seemed like at some time last year, I think when he flipped from Hobbs, you know, it looked like, you know, they were going to make a major push for him, but then he kind of got beat in a squash match, and then since then, it just hasn't been, you know, great for him. And it looks like, you know, in the last few months, I would see him come out, and he didn't look like the same guy. It looked like he wasn't happy in his role. But now, if they are, in fact, turning him heel, we'll have to wait and see. But what you guys see in his future, either wear a title shot or maybe one of the mid-card titles, the TNT or the international title. What do you guys think of Ricky's future after this win?
I genuinely didn't know who's going to win that match going into it, Dan. I wouldn't, you know,
right.
It wouldn't surprise me if they're just like, Punk's our top guy. There's no shame in losing to Punk, and Starks is, you know, not quite at that level that we're going to give him a win over Punk yet, but he's competitive and it's a win for him even being competitive and being in the spot. Or let's give it to Starks and let's have it be maybe a character-defining moment, either because of the win, just winning, or because of how he won or how he reacted to the win. And, you know, he did grab that middle rope. The announcers didn't frame it as like shameful cheating and kind of framed it as he was frustrated and he just grabbed onto it. So, you know, we'll see how how they react to it. But Martha Hart and Tony Khan dancing out to the cowboy hats to present officially the belts and the trophies to Willow and Ricky is making for some interesting television. so I think it's up. Ian Riccaboni framed it as the biggest win of Starks' career. I think he said by far. Not sure if it's by far, but it is. I think the biggest win. It's a high profile win against the one of the top stars, if not the top star in the company. So, Dan, what did you think going in, and what do you think of the match, and what do you think of giving Starks the win?
Yeah, I mean, I think this was a really good night for Ricky Starks, obviously. And I think just entering a feud with CM Punk, which I'm assuming is going to be a follow-up here, or at least a some sort of a series, is great for him. And he doesn't have to obviously, dominate or win the feud to be elevated. I mean, this was really big for him. And from what I could tell, I do not have the sound on, but I have YouTube TV on my phone while I'm concentrating on our call. It looked like, they played this trophy ceremony exactly as they should, which is, I don't think Britt had turned face last year when she won, but it's all about honoring. And maybe she had, I can't recall, but everybody's a good guy here. Good girl, good guy, good person, whatever. They're not going to like cheapen the Owen Hart part of it and the Martha Hart part of it by playing smarmy heel and just not appreciating the honor that they've been given by winning this tournament. So I don't think that has anything to do with where they go with Ricky moving forward, but I think that's, again, something that maybe WWE couldn't resist, but kind of try to get the quote cheap heat there. I'm really glad they didn't do that, obviously. So, I've been a fan of Ricky Starks, really since I believe he was one that came in wrestling Cody in one of these tryout matches early on, if I remember correctly. And, it's been a slow progression, but this is a good move for him. I don't anticipate him being in the world title picture right away. I could be proven wrong on that, but I think it is probably more, looking at one of the upper secondary titles in the short term in terms of him either challenging or winning. And I don't think that's a bad progression. I mean, again, this is a big notch in his belt. And it was a very, again, I like kind of older school, not philosophical. What's the word I'm looking for? Intelligent wrestling, but I'm trying to think of psychological. A lot of psychology in the wrestling. I thought this was a really good match, and it was kind of a Punk type match, an honoring Bret Hart type match, and I thought it was a good performance by both men.
Yeah, I don't think it was spectacular, but it was really solid. It was good. And not every match needs to be like spectacular, but it was smart. It was, I feel like Punk is trying to establish a style that is in contrast to some of the excesses of today, in a lot of what's going on in AEW. You know, we had Kenny Omega, I think, throwing unbecoming fit over criticism of, selling the idea that he hurt his neck and telling people to F off and how, just like in that Sports Illustrated interview. I just thought that was not a good look for him, nor did I think he made a good argument. I think Jason Powell had a great response in his analysis when he posted a news story in that SI interview, just saying, Cirque du Soleil doesn't add entertainment to the event for their viewers by having somebody look like they missed the net and fell and broke their neck. But Kenny thinks that adds emotion. And I think it takes people out of the emotional state they're in watching worked wrestling and takes them into a different zone that's hard to get out of. And for Kenny to not process that and consider it and to lash out in the way that he did, I just think was a bad look for him. I think Punk is in part of it is it's not Punk's strength to work that style or a Young Buck style or a Penta style or Ray Phoenix style. It's like he's got his style, but he's doing side headlocks, he's doing the drop down leapfrog, but he's doing it in a way where it makes sense in because he knows what it's grounded in, where it came from and in what context to do it and how to sell it. And so, I appreciated that match, even if it was hard to follow the tag match earlier, although I think Punk Starks was not all that different than than the FTR Juice and Jay match. Philosophically, in terms of it's not a history and it's style choices in terms of restraint and making everything count, and you know it's what you do in between the moves and it's the pacing that counts, and so you know and that starts the style too, by the way, you know that's
yep.
You know, so yeah, I like the match and I respect what they did, and it's not going to be a match of the year, but it was what it needed to be, and it didn't try to be anything more or different than that.
Yeah, I felt like this entire show was slightly, and I'm probably just saying this to say it, but I felt like it's like, you know, maybe we can get Bret Hart to sign with us here and show up for some of these events. I don't know what his deal is with WWE, but it's like, you got to think he's sitting there watching. And of course, FTR and Punk both love the guy, but I mean, it's just like so much in his wheelhouse. And it was appropriate to do that. I think it's always appropriate to do it, particularly in Calgary.
Yes. Yep. So Scott, you're still with us. Any follow-up on that or anything else you want to bring up?
No, last thing I'll bring up is just this overall style of presentation of Collision. I think everyone has been universally praised, and I just will agree that I just love the pacing and the style of the show. Nigel McGuinness, I love him. Kevin Kelly's okay, but Ian Riccaboni, you know, I miss him. I remember him the early days of NXT calling some of the matches. Not say early days, but 2014, 2015 era-ish. Can't remember the name that he went under but at that time, but I love his style of play-by-play over Kevin Kelly's eye inflection, and oh, no. You know, he's just calling a regular wrestling match. So, I mean, I like his style, and I just hopefully he can – I know Kevin is over in Japan covering G1, but hopefully, you know, Ian could be a permanent fix on Collision because I think he works well with Nigel. But anyways,
Scott,
good,
did you
good show
tune
tonight.
Into this show 2 weeks ago? Did you tune in last time I was here 2 weeks ago? Did you tune into this audio show last time I was on 2 weeks ago?
Yes, I think you. Yeah, I listened to not live, but a day or two after.
Yeah. You're echoing a point that Wade has drilled into my head, I'm afraid.
did it bother you now? Are you unable to unhear it as you listen to him now?
I think it's better at G1, so I think I'm okay. It was. I noticed it a little bit last week, but it's. I'm trying to clear my mind. I watched the matches last. I went to that Avett Brothers show, so I watched the main event at like 2 a.m. So it was kind of in the back of my mind. It didn't bother me that time. So we'll have to see moving forward.
That's good to hear, Dan.
Thank you.
Yeah. I thought Kevin was better last week. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I was going to say, it wasn't you that drew it in. I got annoyed from the first week, too. I'm like, why is he saying that? Why is he talking like that? No one talks like that.
That's right, Scott. That is not a way that normally people talk. Yeah, so I don't know if that got pointed out to him. But I thought last week it was toned down. You know,
good. I thought it was. I thought it was all right last week. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So, anyway. Cool. Scott, thanks. I want to talk to Dan a little bit more about the announcing, but I'm glad you brought that up.
Sure. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Yep, you too.
Thank you.
Thanks. Call again. So, Dan, yeah, Ian Riccaboni versus Kevin Kelly in this context, AW Collision. What do you think of how Ian did, and how do you compare him to Kevin?
You know, I don't have a particularly strong preference at this moment. I would recommend, I'm anxious to read Javier's review of G1. I thought it was I probably watched all of maybe four matches and parts of the other four today, but really enjoyed it. And you know, Kelly's in his element over there, and it was very good. I thought Ian really just got better as the tag match went on, maybe. Not that he was bad at the beginning, but I really thought he just kept bringing up more and more points in history as the match went on. Like maybe at first he was slightly not holding back, but just finding himself and finding his work with Nigel. I thought Nigel was maybe a little better this week too, and maybe that's Ian. I don't know. So I'm not going to make a judgment, but I was really, as you know, I mean, I prefer Kevin Kelly to Excalibur. I mentioned that 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I thought this team was on par with the previous team, and I thought it would and I like Ian, but my expectation was it might be a half step below, and I don't think that it was. I really you know, the things that I observed, they added to the matches pretty well. So I guess if I had to pick, I'd bring Kevin back on there. But it's a really close call, and I didn't think it would be quite this close, I guess. So I was really pleased with the announcing, and I was pleased with the overall show. I mean, that's a really well structured wrestling show with the two tent poles, an important women's match that I thought was fairly good. I thought Willow was better than Ruby maybe. And then kind of a squash that added to a story that, you know, I paid attention, but I wasn't like super into it, to be honest. I mean, it was just kind of, it was exactly what it should have been, I suppose. And so, that would be my thought on the announcing. I thought it was very good.
Yeah. I don't have a strong preference either. So I lean a little bit towards Rick Abani just, but I mean, and I'm not even sure why. And it's a small, you know, small sample size in this context. And he had a great show to call tonight.
Right.
But
That's part of it.
Yeah. But they both bring something different. When I was watching Rampage last night, there's a response from Excalibur. And it's like everything, like there was some backstage attack or some comment where like a human would have an emotional reaction to it. And an announcer whose job is to add emotion or underline the emotion of the moment. And he just says things so matter-of-factly, like mm-hmm. he already knows what he's going to say. And as he says it, he's planning the next thing he's going to say. And there's not that human connection emotionally. It feels he's somebody who says words that he's planned to say in his head and they're divorced from emotion. And it undercuts the investment. That's the best way I can describe it. If you fell off your chair right now and landed on a cat and the cat squealed and ran away and then knocked over some a vase and then water spilled. Okay. Excalibur would call it, Dan just fell off his chair and the cat ran. Now let's pivot to the match coming up. Wait, there's a human, something happened and you should be in the moment. And he doesn't feel like he's in the moment. So that's what gets to me about him. And it's not a perfect example and I don't have my Excalibur impersonation down. But yeah, it's just like something happens and you would be like, you just want that genuine human reaction, and it just isn't there, and it really does take away. But then you have, you know, Kevin Kelly's inflection, and then Ian Riccaboni can be a little too playful sometimes, or, you know, jovial, or I don't know how to describe it, and it, depending on the context. His outfit tonight was very, you know, everyone's kind of in the Calgary spirit.
Right. I won't hold that. Everybody was with the big hats and the pink and the whatever, so I'll give that a pass. But
yeah.
I think, you know, you mentioned this earlier, I think, Wade, like, this show, it's not perfect, but it generally has a sports-like presentation. My favorite wrestling, as I've mentioned, is New Japan, and everything seems normal and reactive to what's actually occurring and not scripted and rehearsed. I don't care for WWE that much because it's gotten better, but, I mean, I got the scripting and rehearsing just, you know, the canned nature of the announcing and interviews for a long time. Really turned me off, and I want spontaneous. I want improv. I also want people with freedom to respond as an actual athlete or a. Why I'm coming up with Brett Musburger? That's way too old of an analogy, but you know, an actual sports reporter would get watching something happen in front of them. And the same analogy you gave with the cat. You don't. And people praise Excalibur for being able to read 800 announcements in 25 seconds or whatever. I guess that's part of his job, but I don't like that either. Like to me, it's not a sports like presentation when I like Jim Ross better than him. And I know people will hear that and want to throw me off this show. In some cases, Jim Ross had his faults when he was doing Dynamite, but when he was really into something, it felt like a sporting event. And I just prefer that. I don't mean to be too hard on Excalibur. I don't think he's terrible or anything, but I think I see him getting votes for announcer of the year over Kevin Kelly, and which was all New Japan stuff. And I just shake my head, but
Michael Cole is a better announcer than both. I watch big WWE matches. Michael Cole is so much better than he was 8 years ago. And just because he was the guy who people thought was the weak link in Jim Ross and the corporate guy with the frosted tips who played a heel and he calls big matches. I mean, saying he's better than Kevin Kelly, I know, is more controversial. Well, I don't know.
I don't think he's better than New Japan Kevin Kelly. I guess that would be my opinion. But we can agree
and
disagree.
And in my opinion, and I think Kevin Kelly's really good in New Japan in big matches. But I think Kevin Kelly benefits from the sports like presentation of New Japan, and that it's, you know, I mean, there's aspects of New Japan that are spectacular and awesome and deserving of praise. And then there's the sort of bonus points for being New Japan, because it's not Vince McMahon. There's a stretch of time where there was a lot of nonsense going on with the booking, but in recent years, but you kind of get extra credit points because it's like, it's overseas and it's sports-like, and it seems, you know, more cool to be the New Japan fan. WWE certainly undercut that with so many things. But Cole is fantastic. And I talk to people who would say publicly, and also people who wouldn't say publicly, in WWE and outside of it, who are like, Michael Cole is the best announcer. He knows. And he's even dropped some of the – I don't want to get on this.
Thing, Wade, that I would echo. I forget how long ago it was when they did the house show from Japan. And clearly he was given freedom on that, and he was phenomenal. This was like 5 years ago. This was pre-COVID, but it was like, I can't remember if it was Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe, but it was, I can't remember what the match, but I was like, wow, this Michael Cole is phenomenal. And so it seems like he's, you know, and I watched some WWE, but not enough to make a definitive statement on how he is today, to be honest. But, you know, I have noticed improvement with him, but I don't want to speak out of school.
And it isn't cool to say Michael Cole's better than Excalibur, because Excalibur knows all the names of Cole. He's part of in theory, although it's disputed, a more cool brand and company. Although I think there's a lot of people who were on the AEW side of things looking for relief from WWE who now look at, you know, the stuff that people are complaining about from Dynamite this past Wednesday, for example, and WWE is doing big storyline arcs and big matches in a way that's a level up. That closes the gap or surpasses some of the high points in AEW. Although, as you say, Collision Tonight is, I think, what a lot of people wanted more of from AEW. Tag team wrestling and serious sports-like presentation, and a contrast to a lot of other things. Now, this could be more of a one-off. This whole night, this whole 3 hours, felt like a Clash of Champions type special for WCW. It was very much about big-time matches. And, you know, they didn't go in order from lowest to highest, you know, because it wasn't like a pay-per-view lineup, because Battle of the Belts is going to have a much smaller audience. Well, a considerably smaller audience in Collision. And the showcase match was certainly, you know, the tag match. But it had a Clash of Champions vibe and feel to it, rather than we're here to promote other things and forward storylines and angles and establish new personalities. And I don't think they're going to do this every week. I think what we saw the last few weeks is more like what we're going to see with Collision. But it is a free pass for Tony Khan. Well, a free pass is maybe overstating it, because the viewership really matters. This is about getting a new TV deal, and he wants big numbers on Saturday. But nobody knows what Saturday Night Wrestling in 2023 on basic cable will draw, so there's nothing to compare it to. If it draws in the 500s, but it's highly ranked in the key demo, and it's one of the top, if not the top show on Saturday night on cable, then it's a victory. You can frame it as a victory, and that gives you the freedom to then artistically do what they did tonight, assuming the viewership holds up. Now, I did the minute-by-minute analysis, and I encourage people. I talked about it on the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members earlier today, too, in more detail. Though I put up some of the highlights of those minute-by-minute numbers on PW Torch earlier today, too. And spoiler alert, the tag team match that went very long last week, that you know, most people say won't work in 2023, people short attention spans, and it's too old school, it's too sports-like, and you need interference, and you need shenanigans, and you need bombast. It did better than Joe Punk, and it grew as the match went on. It was in a better spot than Punk Joe, because generally the audience is stronger mid-show than at the end, but it did better, and it gained viewers as the match went on. It didn't lose them. So I think that probably, you know, and Tony Khan didn't know that when he booked the rematch, obviously, but it might have given him confidence to test an hour match, and it might have given him confidence to test a two-hour show built around wrestling. Now, you're not going to have one cup finals every week, but if this does good numbers, I think we'll see Tony defend. I mean, this is not someone else booking the show. You know, I've asked around. This is Tony Khan booking the show, but he has a different circle of people for Collision than he does for Dynamite. So this is in him. but it's not what he chose to do with Dynamite. But now that he has this other show to experiment with, he does want to differentiate it as an A-B test or for fun, like, because it's different. It's not doing the same thing twice. And he thinks maybe having a differentiated product between the two shows will help both shows be fresh and people will watch both. But he has different people around him, including CM Punk, giving input onto this format. So we're seeing Tony Khan lead, be the head booker for two very different shows. And I don't know if it'll last, but, you know, so far I like Collision and what it's doing. And I think the buzz, a positive buzz coming out of a show like this, is going to lead to some people who go, it's too much and I'm too busy, to start at least watching it on delay and realizing this is not Rampage. This is a show we're seeing.
Yep. And I will say, because I'm wrong a lot, I will give myself a little pat on the back for seeing what was coming with that rating 2 weeks ago. You know, that just wasn't, as we talked about, the crowd wasn't what the crowd was this week. The matches were kind of, you know, it's a carpenter. It's building the foundation for what was coming. But it wasn't anything, you know, you had, you know, Roderick Strong and Samoa Joe as the main event 2 weeks ago. And that didn't hold the audience the way I think Punk and Starks would to a large degree. And maybe it'll help for some people saying, well, I may or may not watch wrestling after the 2 hours. But I'll be surprised if this tag match doesn't maintain or build an audience. Now, maybe, you know, maybe quarters two and three don't all grow, but I bet quarter four is right up there with quarter one, if not higher, because if you're turning on a wrestling show, knowing what this card was going to be, why would you turn it off? Like, what, you know, that stuff is just fantastic. And I guess people don't have the attention span they used to. But again, I think we're at a point in wrestling where you have to cater to wrestling fans. And maybe that seems obvious, but some people think they need to cater to the general audience that's not even watching television anymore. And I think that this is gonna hold the audience that it drew at the beginning. I mean, that I couldn't imagine. I was like, I was texting people, I was calling people, I was like, you need to turn on TNT. Like, this is worth going out of your way to see.
I think a wrestling show that embraces being pro wrestling and presents it in a sports-like way with the utmost reverence for the art form is going to do better with pro wrestling fans than a product that is apologizing and insecure about pro wrestling. Now, pro wrestling is many different things, and there's many different styles of pro wrestling that can all coexist in the ecosystem of all the different competing promotions. It's not just one way is right, and there's, you know, a lot of different styles of approaching a live primetime wrestling show or big super shows that appeal to me. There isn't just one, thankfully. We have listeners who very much like one or the other. Unfortunately, I look as much to SmackDown as Collision this weekend. Maybe Collision a little more this week, just the tag match. But, you know, in a general sense.
But week to week, yeah.
Yeah, week to week. I mean,
like your job and you like wrestling. That's important.
Yeah, and I really like the drama of the bloodline. I think they're raising you know, storytelling and wrestling and character development and layering to another level. And there's good wrestling on WWE television with wrestlers that I talk to, or you can even see them just on social media, who take pride. And they're like, just because my match isn't in the Tokyo Dome doesn't mean it's not at the level of Ospreay or Omega. So watch it through that lens and you'll see we're doing great work here. Just because we also have characters and storylines that wrap around it, that doesn't mean that the stories we're telling with moves and psychology and pacing and selling and isn't at that level, that, you know, in the same ballpark. But, you know, I have no problem with people who just go, I like this style and not that style. That's totally anyone's prerogative. My God, you don't have to apologize or feel guilty for it. But if you're a documentary maker, you don't include like Price is Right games, you know, like in the middle of telling the story of FDR or World War II. Like, you're a documentary, just lean into it and be what you are. Yeah. Same thing. If you're a game show, you don't need to throw in, like, you know, lessons on how to cook. Like, well, unless it's a game show about cooking. Like, just be what you are and embrace it. Like, you know, you're trying to appeal to people who like the genre that you're promoting. So, and AEW Tonight did that. And I like when announcers do that. I like when the announcers are as serious about the product as they would be if everything were real. As real as
exactly.
NBA baseball players are. That makes it more entertaining. It's not insulting the audience if you pretend it's real. It's counterproductive to not pretend it's real during the course of the show.
Absolutely, yeah. And so this is, I mean, again, this is something that when it came out, I was kind of the same way. I was like, well, how often am I going to find time, you know, Saturday to watch wrestling? And now, again, if I'm not traveling for a football game, I may not watch it live, but I'll be watching it probably late in the evening with a football game on with no sound on the other TV. I mean, that's because college football has always been like just huge to me. But this is if they keep it this compelling, I will make sure to, you know, to take part because they reward you.
Did they promote anything for next week tonight?
They promoted a lot about Dynamite. They had the Hook Jungle Boy match. They had, they had two or three other things for Dynamite. I don't recall anything for Collision, which is a flaw we've seen already. I feel like when we talked 2 weeks ago, they didn't have much on the agenda for the following week.
Big criticism after week one. You know, they had this big audience for Punk, and they didn't promote the next week's show. So that concerns me a little bit. I don't know how many people are going to watch or not watch because of how much was promoted the week before. I don't know the number, but there are people who you want them thinking all week, I can't wait till next Saturday.
Now, to be fair, Wade, I would just say, and I don't know this because I was very cursory in my attention to Battle of the Belts. There's always the possibility that they said, oh, because Ricky Starks did so-and-so, we'll see this next Saturday. But
sure,
I didn't see it. So just to be, you know, we don't want to look wrong in retrospect when people listen to this.
Well, in if it was on Collision, then we both missed it. But if it was on Battle of the Belts, if it's on Battle of the Belts, that is a smaller audience. That is not promoting Collision on Collision. And so we're not wrong. It's better than nothing because there are a lot of people watching.
But the thing I would say is that the Punk Starks finish – might lead to something that naturally couldn't be. I was, this is totally random. I was watching some YouTube and this was the 1985 world-class Ric Flair, Kevin Von Erich, Texas Stadium. And I'm watching this thing and they bring out Kerry and Mike Von Erich for an interview. And Kerry gives away the entire storyline between Fritz Von Erich and Gary Hart. They're going to be sitting handcuffed at ringside. And if Gary Hart loses, he's going to lose his hair. And, of course, Kerry probably was maybe not completely sober at the time. I don't know. But then after that, they bring out Fritz and Gary Hart to set up the exact stipulations that Kerry just announced to the crowd. It's hilarious. I'll send you the video. It's I'm watching it going, oh, my gosh. I was just like, so at least they're not doing – that's why – the story this week kind of naturally led to maybe a confrontation between Ricky and Punk next week. Maybe not a match, but you wouldn't want to talk about that you wouldn't want to talk about that until the match was over. And then I don't suspect FTR and the Bullet Club Gold are going to have anything next week. So there wasn't much this week that only having the three real matches that really flowed into next week. So I'll give them a little bit of leeway on it, but yeah, I think generally it's a very valid criticism.
And it, you know, you've got five collisions and you could have built up the last 2 weeks, a match that didn't fit this week, but fits next week, you know,
absolutely.
A little promo, a little vignette going, hey, you know, next week there's
in
this
2 weeks.
UFC knows that, you know, you watch their fight night and they go, hey, next week on pay-per-view, we got this. It's a completely different set of fighters. But so I would say that's, you know, an area in terms of maintaining the audience.
And it's a real mistake just to say, well, we'll wait and get to it on Dynamite because I don't know what the crossover is. I'm sure it's fairly high, but maybe it's 100,000 people that aren't watching Dynamite and you want to reach them. And again, it's better to reach them a week out as opposed to 3 days anyway.
Absolutely, and there's going to be people who are. I remember Linda McMahon, when she used to talk, you know, be an executive who was public facing, and she would go. We were really surprised at the numbers of people who watch SmackDown but not Raw, and Raw but not SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if when the ratings were, you know, viewership was close, it's like there's a huge swath of people who don't only watch one or the other. That's happening now too. So, you know, they should not assume that people are watching both shows. So. Don't want to belabor that point, but it was a problem after week one, and I would say you probably had a big audience tonight. We'll see. Do you have a prediction, Dan?
Whew, now I'm going to step in it after doing so well 2 weeks ago. What did they draw last week? Was it about 580? I forget what the number was last week. And
yeah.
And I know the demo is more important, and the demo, I think, was about 0.21. You know.
They drew 825 last week after 855. I'm looking at
Dynamite. That's Dynamite, I think.
Yep,
yeah,
let
yeah.
me pull Collision up. Yep. Do I have the shortcut on my oh, there it is.
It was a little under 600.
Yeah, 580. So
yeah, okay.
It's 580 up from 452 on the pre-tape show, but below the 595 that people were not panicking over, but going, that's on the lower end of what I thought for week two.
Right, right. So what I would suggest is, you know, they did a 0.21 also. I'd say yeah. maybe 0.23, maybe 620. I think they're going to be up a little bit.
Interesting, yeah.
If they aren't, then, you know, this is about as well of a hype show that they could do, I think. Now, I know Ricky Starks isn't, you know, Adam Cole, maybe, in terms of a draw, but he's a draw, and Punk's a draw, and, I mean, if that match, I think, is gonna get a return audience. So that's I'm on the high side if I miss, but that's – I'll throw it out there.
Yeah, I just think 580 is my over-under. I think Joe Punk was really well hyped last week, and they had the same tag match, you know, also on the show. And it was a little bit more of a traditional wrestling format last week compared to this week. And I just don't know. You know, I mean, we just have such a small sample size. But to me, kind of last week's number is the over-under. I don't
sure.
I could just as easily predict 600 as I could predict 560.
I think,
you know,
there's some positive momentum from how great that match was last week. That's what I'm counting on.
Yeah, yeah. I that's the thing. You know, does good wrestling begot good? I don't know.
Does it draw ratings in the future?
Yeah, it's not a smooth
way to say it, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not. It wouldn't have been as fun as the way I tried to say it. But obviously, I stumbled. But yeah, does having a really good wrestling match lead to fans, even more because of the buzz, even more fans tuning in to see the exact same wrestling match but with an extended format? And you know, we'll see. All right, so a lot of you have just joined us after Battle of the Belts. We did start this conversation right after Collision ended, and we have been talking about the content that we watched of Collision, and then we had Battle of the Belts on in the background, but we didn't pay close attention because we've been sitting here paying most attention to our podcast here. But if you have called in or you are listening now and you want to join us, we'll be on the air for a few more minutes here, and we welcome your call. The number is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. If you've already called in, like Steve and Ashley and some others, and you want to join the conversation, push 1, and we'll bring you on, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on what we've had to say so far or something that we haven't talked about yet. And don't be insecure if you're joining us in progress and you're worried we already talked about something, because we'd still like to get your viewpoint on it. But if you just want to hang out and listen, of course, that is totally fine too. I want to talk about Punk Starks, but I want to, Dan, get your thoughts on Ricky Starks. You mentioned he's not as much of a draw as Adam Cole. Can he be? Should he be by now? Is that something that still can happen? Is this a launching point for Starks to finally become a draw and a star? Because when Collision was birthed by Tony Khan and Warner, the idea was it's gonna give, especially when the idea was they're not gonna just feature the same top talent twice a week, which I think is good.
Right.
People thought, oh, there's gonna be breathing space for Andrade El Idolo, or as Rick Abani and Kevin Kelly call him, Idolo, and more breathing space, you know, for CM Punk, for FTR and tag matches, and for Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. And so far, it's been kind of best case scenario for me that there are wrestlers who are kind of Collision exclusive, even if it's not officially stated and designated on their website and their roster page. And I'm hopeful that this win indicates, one, Ricky Starks is signed longer term with AEW and that they're ready to invest in him, and that this will be a launch point for him. So what do you think of Ricky?
Again, I really like Ricky, and I thought this was a big step in the right direction tonight. And I don't know that it's necessary to bring in imported stars, but I think, to be fair to Ricky, the guys that have been, you know, the biggest stars in AEW for for the most part, either made something in WWE or in New Japan, with the exception of MJF, who's, you know, just a tremendous talent. And I like Darby a lot. I think out of the other three that were in the big match, that he clearly has done the best out of the out of two, three, and four in that particular match. So I think he can get, you know, maybe to that Darby level pretty quickly, which is a really good place to be. And then who knows? I mean, over 5 years, maybe he can become, you know, some of the people they look at the very top of the card, your Danielsons, your Moxleys, your MJFs, I'm forgetting one of the most, Adam Cole even, and again, Kenny obviously is the one I was forgetting. You know, I don't think it's impossible for him to get to that level, but I don't know that he has to get to that level for it to be very successful. I mean, if he's at the, you know, the Orange Cassidy's probably the other best homegrown success story that I would consider homegrown, because he wasn't a star elsewhere outside of AEW that they have. And I think he could, yeah, I think he could reach that level, the Darby Orange Cassidy level, pretty quickly, and that's not a knock on him. So the wrestling's there. Sometimes the personality seems a little forced with him, and I don't even know how to pinpoint that, but that's just kind of my observation. But I thought he was very natural tonight. I liked the finish. I think they can go a lot of different directions with that. I always, yeah. Again, I think back to my wrestling history. I think of Dory Funk Jr. having to put his foot on the ropes in the 70s against Dusty Rhodes when Dusty was still a heel before he turned face, and how that little thing, even though putting your foot on the ropes to break a pin is not the heelish thing that Ricky did, maybe in 1974 it was, right?
Right.
And
yep.
So, I mean, that little subtle thing can kind of, in Dory's case, make Dusty, but in Ricky's case, kind of move him along a little bit and create a real drama with him and Punk, which I like. I don't think they should just drop this.
No,
I think
no.
there's mileage there. So yeah, I think it's a nice step.
And you know, Brett, like Jericho have incessantly bragged about wins over big names. You know, there's like Ricky can just talk about this incessantly if the goal is for him to be a heel.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go next to Erico at 859. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, this is Jeremy from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, Jeremy.
Jeremy, welcome to the show. Yeah, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about AEW tonight?
I called in after Battle of the Belts. So I don't know. Did you guys talk about the satellite feed going out?
No.
Like the show going out? Did you experience that?
During Collision or Battle of the Belts?
Oh, it may have been during Battle of the Belts, but there was a point where...
Was it, Jeremy?
Well, yeah, during what match did it happen?
It was the Tony Storm match. Oh. The ending...
Okay, yeah, I did notice, because we started our show right after Collision, and we had Battle of the Belts on in the background, but I wasn't paying close enough attention throughout to notice if that happened to everybody.
Yeah, it cut, like, it went out, and I didn't see the ending of the match. They started showing the a match from, like, Rampage, I believe, started playing, and then it cut back in. And I was online, like in the chat room, trying to figure out what was going on. They're saying, you know, there was a storm going on up there, and I don't know.
Oh.
But,
okay.
Yeah. But related to
I just got a message from somebody who said it did happen to them, too, so it definitely wasn't just you.
Yeah, so with that subject, they've had a lot of problems like that, like production problems, sound problems, and, you know, I know you've been, like, covering this for a long time. Do you ever remember, like, when, you know, maybe, like, Raw was in its, you know, infancy? Did they ever have that many production problems as AEW has had, like, with the sound and stuff? And, like, who's to blame for that? Like, you know, because I know TNT is, like, behind them, but how much is it, like, Tony Khan's production? And what can he do about this? Or is it just like, hey, you know, they're a young company, they're trying to get, you know, their feet under them or whatever. What do you, you know, what do you think about that?
Real quickly, yeah, you brought up the, this would have been in 96, I think, the Beware of Dog pay-per-view WWF had, where they lost the entire pay-per-view. It was a Shawn Michaels-Davey Boy Smith match, if I remember correctly. And then they like, tried to do the pay-per-view again a couple nights later, and they, I think they ended up refunding everybody's money, but that was like a monsoon in somewhere like South Carolina. And obviously WWE, over the years, you know, is very on top of those things and doesn't have these kind of problems. I'm glad you brought this up, Jeremy, because every week, and I always wonder if it's my YouTube TV, it's very difficult for me to hear the announcers. And I try the sound bar, I try the whatever volume, there's too much background noise, and you can't hear the announcers. And, like, this is every week on these shows, and it's incredibly frustrating. And I think it's unexcusable. Like, I mean, this is a – these people – I watched Mahomes and Kelsey beat the Warriors on the golf thing on TNT, and they did a good job with that. They're capable of broadcasting the NBA. They can broadcast sports. I never go, wow, I can't hear these announcers during this NBA game. Why does it happen every time I watch my wrestling on TNT and TBS? My gosh, in 1988, I could hear Jim Ross and David Crockett whether I wanted to or not. And you know, it's terrible, right? I mean, they need to fix it. And I'm not aware. I'm trying, as you were calling, I'm trying to find my recording of Battle of the Belts here on my YouTube TV to try to scroll through it and see what happened. But I'm assuming it happened on my feed as well. I remember just thinking that the Storm tie match was going fairly long, but I didn't see the finish. So I don't know.
Yeah, so I texted some people in AW just to see if there is any cause for that. I am with you on the sound mix. I turn on closed captioning on my TV during AW shows because the sound mix I can't hear the announcer sometimes. And again, I'm thinking, oh, it's mostly, you know, it might be just my sound bar or a certain setting. But I've heard now from, you know, multiple people, and it's sometimes worse than others. But yeah, it's something that should be brought to their attention, because if they don't know that's happening, it's a, you know, you turn one knob up and one knob down. I mean, it's really easy to fix that. as far as power going out, I'm not sure what caused that. And so, you know, if there's storms in the area and they don't have like a backup feed or something, I mean, that's, you know, on the production team that they hire, and they should make sure that doesn't happen. I don't remember it happening much over the years. Jeremy, back to you.
I don't know. I just don't know if it's like they're, you know, they've only been doing this, you know, for a couple of years, you know, compared to, you know, WWE's like a well-oiled machine. But yeah. I can't help but see these glaring production problems, like that, you know, recently where Excalibur was talking over like a backstage video that was going on at the same time. It's like, what, you know, it just seems to be a little bit tighter. Like I said, I don't know, you know, who's to blame, or if, you know, like you said, maybe they're not even aware of it. But another thing I wanted to talk about real quick, I don't know how much you guys have talked about Juice Robinson. He's really stood out to me because I don't I don't watch New Japan, and I heard all this hype about Jay White come in, and like, oh, I'm gonna finally get to see this Jay White I keep hearing about, right? But honestly, Juice has impressed me more. He seems like a throwback to, like, he reminds me like an old like Macho Man or a Ultimate Warrior, like over-the-top personality, like, you know, from that era that, you know, I grew up on, and I just kind of love it, and I'm kind of gravitating towards him. What do you guys think about him and his potential? I know he was also like the hippie activist guy in NXT for a while. Was that the same guy?
Yeah.
Yep, it was. Yep, absolutely. He he is impressing me. Also, Dan, I really like, he doesn't feel like a sidekick to Jay White,
right,
even though he by definition is.
Right.
he is coming across as in terms of being grabbing your attention and contributing to matches. He's a contrast to Jay White. Jay White's a cool cat, and Juice is this. How would you describe Juice? Not a weirdo, but a kind of a more
hyper,
yeah,
you know, excited. I'll give you my opinion on Juice, Jeremy, like, because I do watch New Japan, and I'd like to hear. You know, I know I've been talking to Rich Fan, who's will be back as soon as he can be with Wade. I'd like to hear Rich talk about this because he really knows his stuff on Juice. Juice was doing a really good job as kind of this earnest baby face in New Japan. And then I thought his heel turn was good at first, but he just didn't quite find himself as well, which is weird because now he's this phenomenal heel. And I guess, I mean, when they signed, you know, Jay White and Juice Robinson, like, there was no question which one I was more excited about, and it was Jay White. And I still think Jay White has the most potential to be world champion out of almost anybody in the company, so that's no slight to Juice. Yeah. But these guys play off of themselves phenomenally well, and as I talked about with Wade 2 weeks ago, they bring something good out of the Gunn brothers as well when they're all together. He's really finding himself, and he's comfortable in his own skin. And I really think, like, Jay's cool catness, as Wade described it, gives Juice even more reason to, like Jay's always kind of like, hey, hold on, calm down, buddy, calm down. Like, it's a great dynamic. Like, these guys, it, like, you know, I don't know if they came in together thinking they would team because they were so familiar with one another, but, you know, sometimes these tag teams just explode. And, you know, as much as I want to see Jay at the top of the card challenging for the world title, this thing has legs and they need to stick with it for a while because it's really great. And so I echo what you're saying, but I would say that very few people were as excited about Juice coming in as Jay as even your default was. That's not an unusual thing because Juice was struggling a little bit toward the end there in New Japan. And he's found himself now.
Yeah. I don't think anyone thinks Juice is going to be a bigger star than Jay, but I can imagine people thinking he's more entertaining at this moment or, based on his reputation and his past work, a pleasant surprise in that, again, he doesn't – it's like there's Jake Hager to Chris Jericho. And it's like, yeah, you want Hager to be more serious, but he's not. He's obsessed with the hat. He doesn't seem all that committed. He's just sort of hanging out because of inertia. That's not Juice. Juice is, like, working – and there's chemistry and there's this contrast of the personalities. I'm trying to think of an example of a tag team where there's a clear leader, but there was a partner, well, almost the Briscoes in a way, Mark and Jay, you know, where there's like, you know, there's the more serious guy. And then there's Javier described it once to me in a way that I don't think is appropriate for our podcast. But, you know, there's a guy who kills someone and then there's a guy who does something afterwards. And yeah, it's like, it works. It's working. It's working better than I think most people expected who had followed Juice. And so, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Jeremy, because I think, you know, everybody deserves sort of a fresh look when they're in a new environment and they're bringing it. And he is, and he's also not overdoing it. You know, Dan, I mean, he's the type of act you could be like, okay, tune it. You're at 12. Let's dial it down to 8. You know, you don't need to be the center of attention overdoing it. But he's not. I think he's struck the right tone.
Right. And even at the end of that match, I loved Jay spitting there at the end. But it was – Jay's still a little bit of the leader of that team, right? Like
for sure.
Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, even – obviously, but even in storyline, right?
Yep.
Like I liked how he made the decision not to shake hands there at the end. And there's just such a dynamic between those guys that's really phenomenal. Yeah, I'm trying to think of tag teams – where the one guy was super hyper and the other guy was kind of trying to keep him calm without trying to keep him calm. And I'm embarrassed that I'm drawing a blank because there's several, you know, good examples throughout history. And I'm going to be thinking about Kevin Kelly's voice and that analogy for the next 30 minutes. So.
I love when I can leave someone tortured. Jeremy, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
No, that's all I have. And I look forward to listening to the beginning of the show tomorrow.
Cool. Yeah, we talked a lot about the tag match, as you can imagine. I appreciate the call, Jeremy, and I hope you'll call again.
I sure will. I love the shows, guys.
Thanks, Jeremy.
All right. We're going to wrap up soon, but if you want to give us a call, 347-215-8558. And if you call, push 1. That'll flag you on the switchboard so we know you want to sneak in and be part of the show tonight. So Willow Nightingale won the women's side of the Owen Hart Cup tournament, Foundation Cup tournament. I thought it was the right call.
Yeah.
I think Willow has more of an upside, more to be gained. She's just a likable, ebullient character who is also coming along in the ring where, yeah, she just seems like there's a joy of performance with her. That reminds me a little bit of Chad Gable and Jason Jordan in NXT, where there's that joy of performance and it's infectious. And she's distinct in that way.
Yeah.
You know, there's too much of the Mandy Rose type approach to, well, if we're going to have women on a wrestling show, they better look like they could, you know, that they're going to appeal in a certain way to a certain part of the fan base. And I think there's more diversity now than there used to be, certainly during the Divas, you know, relay race era, which was just shameful of WWE at the time it was. And it just looks so terrible in retrospect too. She's a really good choice. And, you know, we talk about what the win means for Punk. I mean, this win for Willow is going to designate her in the eyes of fans as someone AEW is taking seriously. So you should too. And you need to give people those indicators, whether they think about it on a meta level or they're just observing as more casual fans, you've got to give some type of win and statement moments to people that you believe in to send that signal. And I think tonight was that for Willow.
Absolutely. You know, she's one of those people, and I'm forgetting who I used this analogy for before, but it's one of those people that, like, if you found out that she was like this bitter, hateful person that didn't really like wrestling, you'd kind of like lose your faith in humanity. Because I don't think you can fake that type of enthusiasm and just likability.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you need to go with that. I mean, she certainly got something out of beating Mercedes, but of course she lost that to Julia recently. And I really thought this was absolutely the right call. The only thing that like irritated me, I guess, and it wasn't really about this match but the way Ruby won those other two matches was just so ridiculously stupid. At least they didn't do it tonight, but I don't know. Like, I mean, to have the blatant interference they had, I guess there was a storyline reason. Maybe she said she was going to do this on her own and I missed that part tonight, but like, you know, she hasn't won any matches on her own forever. And they decided to do it, you know, straight up tonight, which I was pleased with. It was kind of such a change from the previous two matches and like all the Outcast match for maybe the last 2 months that it was a little bit jarring. I'm glad they did it, but maybe they could have done more to either throw out the rest of the Outcast or explain. Maybe I missed it, but it just seemed to be such a change from the way they've been laying out those finishes for the last several weeks that it was a little bit unusual, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think what you think of anything, any thoughts on the House of Black squash win and then Andrade coming out? I mean, that was pretty basic stuff.
It was paint by the numbers. I mean, I'll give a Todd answer to that. It was fine, but it didn't do much. It's fine. Like that's what they need to have some things.
Yeah.
Like you said, they're building to something in the future. Not everything has to be about this week's rating. And I think that's wise. And, you know, everything we talked about the really ridiculous thing from Andrade 2 weeks ago. And this was fine. It all made sense. There was nothing bad about it. I wasn't paying completely close attention because it's a squash match and it was fine. It was just what it was.
They followed up on the QT Marshall Powerhouse Hobbs angle last week. I didn't rewatch it, but I didn't really understand what happened. So QT says, "My word is my bond," and Hobbs said, "Your word is your bond," and then left, and then QT smiled. What do you think that meant? What was that?
I mean, it was purposely ambiguous, not particularly well done, in my opinion. But I think the idea is QT thinks he's winning, Hobbs over, Hobbs is over it. That was my very, yeah, I didn't go back and watch it either, but that was my very quick impression that, you know, maybe QT will come out with Hobbs next time, and then Hobbs will completely boot him from the team. I think that breakup is coming. That was what I thought, was that it was a step forward in advancing that story, which if that's the case, you could stretch it out a little bit. That's fine.
Marshall saying I didn't intentionally cost you the match, I think is true. I mean, I don't think he intentionally cost him the match.
Right.
So if Hobbs is turning babyface, it's kind of a weird way to do it, but he could also go, I don't need your help. I told you to not jump on the ring apron, but why are you associating with QT in the first place if you don't want him to interfere, because QT is a scumbag and he interferes on behalf of his wrestlers. So I just don't think I don't think this is a great way to turn Hobbs if that's what they're trying to do. And then the follow-up, where is my bond? But do you need to find the biggest and baddest in AEW and knock him out to prove it? That just feels like a non sequitur. I have no idea what that means in the context of what happened last week. I'd like them to explain what they were trying to say and justify it, because I just thought it completely fell flat. Maybe it made sense to others, and I just don't get it.
I don't think it made sense. Yeah. I don't think it made a lot of sense to anyone. And I guess the most charitable interpretation of that is, well, it's going to make more sense next week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, like, it was open-ended enough that maybe they can salvage it. But yeah, I there's a lot of that kind of stuff with that whole team QT there that just kind of, some of it's entertaining. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there have been times where I've been entertained by some of the little stuff they did with Wardlow, and it was silly. But yeah, it doesn't always make all the complete sense.
Yeah. Well, anything else you want to bring up, Dan, before we sign off here?
No, I mean, I think we got to all my obscure references that that I even thought about tonight. And again, just appreciate the callers and a real thumbs up to this show. Obviously, I it's not perfect, but and you brought up the segment that might have been the least perfect just now, but they seem to be finding their footing and presenting a really solid wrestling show. And I hope they don't try to reinvent the wheel and get away from that, because it's refreshing and it's fun as far as I'm concerned.
Yep. Very good, Dan. It's been a blast. We'll have you on again when it works in your schedule. And thanks to our listeners, our callers, and everybody. We'll talk to you Monday night after Raw. And in the meantime, check out Darren Lilly's report on Impact Slammiversary pay-per-view running concurrently to Collision Battle of the Belts tonight. A lot going on with G1. Slammiversary and Collision Battle of Belts today. So a lot of wrestling to catch up on if you haven't caught up on it all by the time you're listening to this podcast. Thanks, Dan. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.